Hey guys, this is Colby and Devin from the aristagamer.net podcast, and
Hi
looks
guys.
like it's time to get started with our second monthly podcast, and there is tons of news that we have to get into. This is going to be
Good
ridiculous.
Lord, yes.
Okay, so as everybody knows, we did, I think, 4 days of Gamescom coverage for news, and there's tons of things to go on over there. Let's go ahead and start off with the Skyward Sword finally getting a release date.
It's about darn time, too.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Nintendo likes to do that. They like to wait until just a few months before something is supposed to come out and then give you the release date, and it's very
Oh,
annoying.
you know this release date being in November is entirely because of everything else anyone's anticipating is coming out this November.
I know there are so many things: Assassin's Creed, Battlefield, Call of Duty, Mass Effect.
There you go.
That one that we didn't play, or that are
Yeah, that
going to
one we're
play.
playing like right now, finally.
Well, yeah, it's coming out November the 20th. It's right around Thanksgiving, so I'm definitely gonna be home munching on some turkey and stabbing some people.
Yeah, I'll be doing pretty much the same thing. If I'll take a break from one game to just start it on another or another or another. It's gonna be a very, very poor month.
Yeah, for real. It's going to be serial gaming, and I'm going to be really surprised if we get through everything.
In that month, no way. No way.
Okay, so yeah, that wasn't, I mean, that's such a small piece of news. It's just that it got a release date. Ubisoft announced that there are six titles in development for the PlayStation Vita, and that's good. All six of the titles are Assassin's Creed, Rayman, Luminous, Asphalt, Dungeon Hunter Alliance, and Michael Jackson Ex the Experience.
Oh,
And
I've been waiting for that one for 2 years.
yeah,
Finally,
exactly.
Michael Jackson game on a handheld. That, oh, God, yes.
I was so excited about, being able to dance on my Vita. I was like, woo!
That's funny because you'll be doing that exact sound in the game too.
Yeah, unfortunately, they announced six titles for the Vita, but not six good ones. They announced arguably three good ones, one mediocre one, and two is. So, I don't know. The Vita, I guess let's go ahead and get into that topic too. The Vita is going to actually be coming up against some stiffer competition than we thought. It turns out Nintendo decided to drop the price on the 3DS by $70.
Well, yeah, they kind of realized that making you spend $350 for a gimmick was probably a bad idea.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they still don't have the games to back it up. I mean, as we reported, their sales went up. They had the second highest selling week, the only being topped by their initial release week, but they had their second highest week after the price cut, and I'm not sure that that's going to be a good long-term solution for what is going to be, I think, something like the Virtual Boy.
Yeah, it's still way too much when really you're doing it for the 3D quality of a dinosaur ruler or something. It's just I've seen this thing firsthand. Yeah, it's kind of fun and everything, but then when you set it down, you're done for the day, you're thinking, you know, that's exactly what $350 looks like. Doesn't look much different from the other one next to it.
And unfortunately, for I guess everybody, the 3DS is relying so heavily on games that were made for the Nintendo 64. They're relying on Ocarina of Time and
Star
Star
Fox coming
Fox.
up. Yeah.
Exactly. Those are the games that are coming up.
Yeah, well, that's Nintendo for you. I mean, they have the few titles in the past that were cult classics and success. And so, you know, with every system, they're going to have, you know, the new Mario Kart, a new Mario title, new Legend of Zelda title. So with this DS, instead of just relying on different versions of this title, they're going to go for the nostalgia aspect because, hey, nostalgia's selling these days.
Yeah, at least initially. I mean, they're going to be coming out with a new Super Mario game and a new Mario Kart, but those aren't coming out for a few months. I mean, it just seems like Nintendo really dropped the ball in the launch of this console.
They're so focused on getting this 3D without glasses to work, they didn't have anything else to go with it. And so I don't know. I don't really know if I'm ever going to be able to bring myself to spend that kind of money for a 3DS when the DS I have is working great. Most of the games I'm interested in playing work on it because the other ones like Star Fox or the little gimmicky games, it's just I don't want to spend that kind of money and then spend more money on the game for something I played 10 years ago.
Agreed. Looks like Ice Alex wants to talk about the upcoming game lineup. Go for it.
Well, since we all know that something happens with games coming out in November, maybe the same thing will happen for Nintendo after Skyward Sword will come out. They'll like start announcing more and more games coming out for the 3DS, and since they are probably going to shell out more information on the Wii U next year, the lineup will get more and more powerful as the time goes on.
I think that's a good point, but I don't think it's an accurate one because,
You
as you
have
can
high
see,
hopes, man.
Nintendo is fire selling these things. They are trying to get them pushed into the market so that all they need to do is so that all they need to do is push out good games, and there's already a built-in console base.
Yeah, they're really getting below average lately. I mean, even with E3, the most exciting news was about the Wii U, and we already had this discussion on how confused we were at that more than we were excited because we still had no idea what it was.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that, one of the arguably the best video game manufacturing companies has just so poorly have so badly fumbled. But if you think about the price cut coming into an effect, it comes into effect, right now. It's already happened. It's in August, and in November is whenever the Vita is coming out in Japan. Now, they've already said they're not going to come out in any other place this year, so that's kind of sad for us here in America and people in Australia and Europe, but
Oh, they
in
had to figure out their
Japan,
own first.
they're definitely going to be competing for their Christmas presents, and I can say that now that they're not at the same price point, now that the 3DS and the Vita are not equal, the 3DS is actually cheaper. I can guarantee you that that's going to create a bigger competition for people whenever they're gifting to one another.
Yeah. Even with the price drop for the 3DS, I already know that by then a lot of the let's say for the younger generation that Nintendo's really going towards these days, that for say like an 11 or 12 year old, they're gonna have the 3DS that maybe a friend has. They'll play on a little bit, think it's kind of cool to have this 3D effect, but as time goes on and has more availability comes with playing on the little 3D games, it's just gonna they're gonna end up getting bored. They're gonna realize, this is kind of fun and everything, but it's just I'm not really getting what I want out of this. I wish I had a bigger screen or something that I could really actually enjoy this because the screen's small and I'm already bored with this. I'm gonna go see what PlayStation's got, and so it's a good for PlayStation to I'm sorry, for Sony to get that Vita by then because in my opinion, by then kids will be bored with the 3DS.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And they're also definitely not dropping the ball with their release titles. I mean, they've got Uncharted, they've got that game Ruin that's going to show off the PS3 and the Vita connectivity. They're going to show off, they have tons of graphical games that are going to show how much you can push this console. And they're also bringing the flagship Little Big Planet on board. And as you saw from that trailer, you can do a lot of really cool things in Little Big Planet with a touchscreen.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I think the Vita is going to have a much bigger launch, and it's going to have much more staying power than the 3DS, but I certainly think that at least this holiday season, that the 3DS is going to be giving the Vita a run for its money.
Yeah, I think Nintendo was really hoping that the 3DS would go the way kind of like Game Boy Color, that it was the size of a Game Boy Pocket, but you have this added graphical upgrade that everyone's really wanting. So instead of having a DS capabilities, you have a DS with this upgrade in graphics, but it's not really an upgrade that people are wanting. It's more of an upgrade that people are kind of into now. Not really worth it. We're not making a huge jump from monochrome or black and white to full colors. It's making a jump from a three-dimensional graphics on your screen to a slightly more three-dimensional graphics on your screen.
Yeah. Looks like iSolid wants to bring up another really good point about the Vita that we didn't bring up. Go for it.
You're biased.
Well, I think that the dual analog sticks on the Vita will be really great for developers to be able to make games that they couldn't make on the PSP before, because dual analog sticks make it much, much easier to make games that fit the standards that they've made for consoles for a long time. So, like, porting stuff that looks really good and making new IPs or new games on it will be a lot easier than trying to figure out how to incorporate 3D into something that they have no clue how to use.
Oh my word, yes. I cannot wait to play a Metal Gear Solid game on the Vita, because I tried to play it on the PSP. I really, really did. I wanted to like the PSP games so much, but you just couldn't. The controls were atrocious. It was like GoldenEye, but really bad. I mean, without that other analog stick helping you out with the camera control, you just cannot play a first-person shooter, let alone a third-person shooter.
Do you, I don't know, you may have already posted about this on the site, the dual analog sticks, are they going to be actual analogs, or are they going to be kind of sticking up and you move them around on a flat plane like in the other PSP?
Oh, are they like nubs or actual analog sticks? I think they're like analog sticks.
Great, because nubs are terrible, and they were a bad idea.
Yeah, nubs are kind of weird.
I'd rather have two D-pads than that, honestly.
Well, I don't know, Well, I think worse than nubs is the name Nubs. I mean, that invokes...
Says the one that can't wait for a handheld called the Vita.
Well, I mean, you know, think about it. The Vita means life in Latin or something. I don't even know. But the point here is that the word nubs makes me think of somebody who has their legs cut off.
Oh, that's terrible.
I don't want to think about people that have had their legs cut off when I'm playing games. Like, man, this nub is so hard to...
That gave me a haunting image in my mind. Thank you.
All right, let's go ahead and move on. I think the 3DS, we pretty much wrapped up that it's kind of terrible and hokey. But
and mostly terrible.
That, yeah. I think next up... there's a title that's going to be coming out that I'm pretty sure is going to make me cry, called To the Moon.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah. Really, I don't know what it is with developers these days. I think the small-time developers have realized how they can tap into the sort of market of people like you and I and sort of our generation that grew up with 16-bit graphics, is that either you bring it back to 16-bit graphics or you upgrade 16-bit graphics. You don't have full 3D, you have isometric type stuff, and I think that they're choosing to do that for us to say, oh man, you know, I remember whenever games like this were really good. And
exactly,
you know, they're not looking to be blockbuster games. They're looking to get to the people that are going to appreciate them.
Oh god, yes. A lot of people that have those really good games from 16-bit days, you know, with Chrono Trigger and with the Final Fantasy III and, you know, with the old Legend of Zeldas. I mean, there was a lot of emotional connection, not just a nostalgic factor to the fact they were fun. We found those at the time technologically amazing as well. You know, how does gaming get any better than this, in a sense? So so we replay them a lot. Even today, you know, I'll replay old Zelda games or replay Chrono Trigger because they're good, but we already do know the story. So to really, really put focus onto the story and the gameplay, not just on the graphics, but by using that old nostalgic factor, you're giving a new gaming experience to people that are wanting a new gaming experience instead of having to replay these older ones to try. It's like that high you get. You know, you first do a drug, you get that really big high, and then every time you replay the game, you're wanting that first experience, but you're never really going to quite get that. With these new games coming out in that style, you pretty much will.
Yeah. And I think another good thing to bring up is the story of this. Like I said, it's going to make me cry, I'm sure, because, you know, it's just... I'm just a weak man.
The music in that trailer, holy cow!
Yeah, I know, it was really good music, and the the story behind it is essentially doctors have found a way to go back and let you relive your memories and correct your mistakes so that in your head, it's like you lived your life the way that you wanted to. However, the trauma that happens to you while this is happening, you know, all this stuff going on in your head to mess around with your memories is so great that they only perform it to people on their deathbed. And so these doctors will come in to a man that's, you know, lying almost dead, very near death. They set up this machine and they relive his entire life with him, you know, in a matter of a few hours or whatever, the important parts in his life. And in this particular game, they're trying to figure out what this guy's dying wish is. Now, it's not really going to matter in the end because, you know, they're already killing him, but still.
Who cares what your death wish is? You're dead to me.
Exactly. We're already in your head. You know the second you wake up, you're
so
dead.
It's
your last 16 doesn't matter.
Bit Inception, in a sense.
Yeah, I can see that. A little bit of Inception.
Honestly,
seems...
I wonder how the choice interface is going to be like that. It's going to be in this game. If it's going to be kind of like Mass Effect or Dragon Age, that, you know, depending on what decisions you make, you know, is going to affect what kind of relationships you have later on in the game. So, you know, if that means that if they're going to try and push that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm going to keep a really close eye on this game and its development because I really do want to play it. And another example of a game that's sort of taking this graphical approach to get into our hearts and minds or whatever is Bastion. I'm playing Bastion right now, and it's really good, I gotta say. I mean, the color palettes on it, the narrator in it, I'm sure I'll get into all that whenever I actually review it, but needless to say, it is a great, great game so far.
I honestly don't know anything about it except for what you've told me today and yesterday, so I want to know more about it now that you seem so excited about it.
Yeah, no, trust me, on Steam, go for it. It's $15. It is so worth it.
That's it? Really?
Yeah.
I might get it tonight.
Well, so another good point, another good piece of news that's being brought up is just how good things on Steam are now. Valve is making tons of money off of this. I don't know. You know, it's up to speculation for how they are getting their money. Hats.
Mostly hats. All hats.
What they're doing is they've opened up the channel between gifting games and trading hats. So now, if you have, say, the Pyromancer mask, and you're like, yeah, you know, I have this Pyromancer mask. I want Bastion for it. And so somebody can give you Bastion.
I am actually kind of all right with that. And I'm one that has pretty much been tired of this hat crap on Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, really, you were telling me about that. What did you want to say about that?
Well, I don't know. It's just, the hats, when they first came out, it was kind of a clever idea because it was, you know, something that they were very, very rare items when this was first released. So when you actually did get your hands on a hat, yes, it's very exciting, and when you were wearing it, people will notice, okay, that character's actually wearing a hat. He's put a lot of time into this game. It was almost kind of like a status item. But because of how frequent you can get hats, it just sort of seems useless. I don't get the point of them anymore. They don't mean anything except, yeah, you know, some of them are kind of funny, like the beanie with the propeller on the pyro. I love it. It looks funny, sure. But with so much emphasis on hats to the point that you can go to a store and spend more money on hats than you did when you bought the game before the game became free, that doesn't make any sense to me because the hat doesn't do anything except give you some looks. I mean, it's becoming more like The Sims with guns.
And yeah, I agree.
It's taking away from the experience that I've always loved with Team Fortress 2. I don't know how many hours I have in that game before the hats came around, and I was kind of leery with how they were doing the weapons updates, but they've more or less been able to keep with balance. Yes, there's a few overpowered weapons, a few underpowered, but it's okay. But yeah, it's just that they're really putting so much emphasis on these hats and buy our hats. Hey, look, this hat's only $1, so buy 30 of them. It's just sort of I'm really kind of worried that Valve's going to be so focused on these hats and things, they're going to not really stay focused on the community, with map building, with different game experiences.
Yeah, and the hat model, though, I think this is enabling something that is something that I can completely support and get behind. Deus Ex Human Revolution just came out today. I actually have it sitting for the PlayStation 3 on my coffee table right now. Just can't play it because I'm playing Bastion. but Deus Ex Human Revolution on the PC, if you downloaded it through Steam, you got a pre-order bonus, if you pre-ordered it, obviously. And you got to have some items in Team Fortress 2. You could have, you know, a big robot arm. You could get some weapons for, I think, Sniper and Spy. They also have hats and sunglasses and stuff. And I think that's the kind of way that pre-order bonuses should be. Because, you know, this is providing content for another game that maybe you play, and it's definitely one that's free, so...
Yeah.
It's providing you content that isn't necessary in the game, and it's not going to give anybody an unfair advantage or change their gaming experience based on whether or not they pre-ordered the game.
Yeah, they've done that a couple of times with pre-orders. The one that comes to mind was for Left 4 Dead 2. You know, if you had the pre-order of the game, you got the beret hat that Bill wears in Left 4 Dead 1, and I've honestly found that no matter what character you play in TF2, that hat looks cool. And you can't trade for it, you can't buy it, it was only if you pre-ordered the game. That makes sense, because that tells people, hey, he has that only because he pre-ordered. It's not a, yeah, you know, we're going to have this hat available for this kind of pre-order, and, well, nah, never mind, you can buy it for a buck. Then, you know, what was the point?
Yeah, but on the flip side of that is something that I can also get behind, and that's... the way that the Batman Arkham City game is happening, they're doing it in skins. Essentially, depending on where you pre-order and what time you pre-order and all that, you get different skins for Batman, be it, you know, Batman Beyond, Batman...
You know whoever's going to have the skin for the Batman animated series is going to be the most popular pre-order of this game. Everyone's going to want to play as that.
You know, that's what I thought, and then I was looking at the character model, and man, those big white slits in that face just look so creepy next to all the other human-looking ones.
I know, right? It's great.
That's awful.
I love it. Are you kidding me? Because think about it this way. You're going to have the other characters in the game look normal and human-like. You know, you're going to have Catwoman, and you're going to have all the little minions that the Joker has going after you. And meanwhile, you have this big, white-eyed cartoon character kicking their butt when everyone else looks normal. That's fantastic.
Ren also brings up a good point. I don't need a badge to prove to the world that I shop at GameStop. And I can get behind that, but I think Batman Arkham Asylum is really doing it the right way, because they're doing it to where all these skins, you get it for free if you pre-order at a certain place, but later on, they're going to make them available so that you can download and buy them as DLC in a couple of months.
See... I don't know about, I mean, if it's part of a DLC that also have extra missions or something, sure, but to spend money in order to make my character look like something I want and that's it, unless it's a simulator, I just find that really cheap. I mean, most people are going to want to have a different kind of skin to play on the character because, you know, it'd just be a fun experience for them. But in order to do that, you have to shell out more money than when you paid for the game. It's just, that... Dude, come on. Care about the customer.
Yeah, but I think that's the same argument as, you know, well, I don't think TF2 needs hats. I think it's,
it
you
doesn't.
Know, if you want to buy a hat, buy a hat. If you want to buy a Batman skin, buy a Batman skin. It's, you know, it's not affecting
okay,
or hurting
fine,
you.
Okay, fine, I'll admit I'm just bitter because I don't have to spend more money to make my character look like the guy from originals from the cartoon series because I really want that.
Yeah, I can find out where to pre-order that. Or the Batman Beyond one, because that also, in the series, he was, like, crazy skinny and weird and awkward proportions, and that character
mostly
model
crazy,
just looked
skinny
bad.
And awkward proportions. That stuck with my mind since I first saw the show.
Like a size 5 waist and 12
yeah,
chest,
actually,
I don't know.
Quick question on all those little skins I saw loaned up. What is up with sumo wrestler Batman? I don't get that.
That is, I think, Batman Dark Knight Rises, which is, or sorry, not Dark Knight Rises, that's the movie, Batman, the one where he comes back when he's like 50 and he's all super muscly.
Those are muscles?
Yeah, those are muscles and fat.
God, yeah, I was gonna say, it looks like he had an eating disorder.
He's old.
He's really old, eating disorder Batman. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's the one who's gonna be punching Two-Face in the face. Or two faces. All right, another good thing that's coming up, in relation to Steam, I know we sort of went off on DLC there for a little bit, but Gamefly is coming out with a PC game service now.
It's about time. Now I might actually have to get an account.
I really like it. I have Gamefly. That's how I can review so many games without breaking my bank. You know, I got Deus Ex through Gamefly. I think it's a great service, and this is only going to draw more people to it. Essentially, the way that this is going to work is, as long as you're a subscriber, you can access the games that they have in their library, and they are going, whenever they launch later on this year, they're going to have, they say, I think 100 games in their library. No word on if they're good or anything. The point is that
they're all Michael Jackson games.
Oh, that would be awful.
That would be fantastic.
Oh, no. But, you know, if they're good games, then being able to install and play them and try them out, as it were, would be great, I think.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to do well with security, right when you say with installing, because with PC games, you know, it obviously would be easier to just have the disc, you'd be able to crack, make a copy of the game, and then return it to Gamefly. So I really hope that they're prepared for that, because you know it's going to... But otherwise, I really am excited about that too. I mean, just because it is the Gamefly service. You're paying less, you're going to get to check out a game, you don't have to pay the full price for it, or find a pirated copy of it to check it out before you actually spend the money on it, and it's just all around a great, great, great idea, and it's about time they did it. They should have done it sooner.
Yeah, and if you notice, the way that this relates to Arista Gamer is that now we can say, why don't we check out this PC game, and we can both go download it and start trying it out on PC, take the screenshots or whatever, and we don't have to spend $40 in a game that we think is terrible, which is why, if you've noticed, like, we've had, I think, two or three reviews now on games on Steam that have been below $20.
Yeah, it's either been indie games or they've been ones that we've been able to kind of catch on sale. I mean, yes, I mean, we're not saying the games aren't worth reviewing, of course. You know, we wanted to review them because, I mean, they're worth it. I mean, they're out there. They need to be reviewed. They're games. That's pretty much our criteria. But they're also ones that we can afford to check out, because being able to, every month, spend the full price for, like, a Battlefield game or something just to review. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not such a good thing. I can definitely see where, you know, where it's a bad thing for some people to be able to, you know, to download all of these games to their Steam account. And that happens a lot now. I'm sure we have a couple of friends who will rename nameless that have like 200 games and, you know, 190 of them they never played. And, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, I don't think. But, you know, with this PC download service, you can try the game. If you don't like it, you don't have to buy it. And if you do like it, it would be better for you to buy it, you know, because if you lose your Gamefly thing, there goes all of your saves. That's another thing that I'm wondering, is where are your save games going to go? Are they going to be downloaded to Steam's, Gamefly's cloud? Or are they going to be downloaded to your local disk?
Like, I don't see why they wouldn't just be downloaded on your own hard drive.
You know,
same
that's
as
what,
a... console.
That's what I would think. However, I mean, if you think about it from a business standpoint, in order to keep somebody with you, you want to have them still subscribing to your service. Let's say that maybe, okay, I'm bored with Gamefly for the next 3 months. There's no real good PC games I'm going to come out with. Why don't I just go ahead and cancel? And instead of allowing me to do that and keeping my save games, if they have access to my save games, then A, I can't play the games that I was playing through Gamefly, and B, even if I had bought the games through another service, the save games that I was starting on with Gamefly, I can't access now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So
I didn't think of that at all.
it's kind of a bad thing, I think, for the consumer if that's the case. But, you know, I can understand where they're coming from. They're in business. They have to make money.
Well, yeah, and, you know, it's a good market to get into. PC gaming is still pretty popular, obviously. So, you know, I hope they're able to kind of work that out, and I really hope that that it takes off well, so that way they can expand the library and get even more games into it, because it's a good service right now, and doing it this way, they could really monopolize on game rentals.
Yeah, I agree, and that's something that I think would not be that bad. I mean, you know, Netflix is sort of taking the monopoly on renting movies away from everybody, so...
Yeah. Okay, next up, I'm browsing through the list from the Gamecom games, see if there's any of them that we missed. Oh, right, we talked about this a little bit earlier. The War of the Roses. Saw the quick trailer for that. All it was a man in armor, medieval armor, riding horseback, come to a castle, some screaming in the background, title. I mean, obviously, when you look at the title, you know, with the two flags next to it, that this is going to be based on the historical War of the Roses between House Lancaster, House York, because the two roses were the dead giveaway. You know, the white rose for the House of York and the red rose for the House Lancaster. So I'll be kind of interested to see what this game does, since it's taking such a pivotal moment in history. And a very specific time in history as well, because, I mean, obviously, this War of the Roses was set up the Tudor dynasty, and with the show and with the popularity of Henry VIII and everything lately, you know, everyone's kind of getting into this whole Tudor thing, and this is what led to that. So I just wish I knew what the game actually was.
Oh, yeah. Whenever that came out, I saw War of the Roses, and, you know, that's another thing that I heard in a history class somewhere, and I don't remember it. I'm not really a good man for, you know, current events and everything. You ask me stuff about games, and I know it, but beyond that, I'm pretty much clueless. But I didn't even research the War of the Roses. I just knew that it was some event in history, and I saw the trailer, and I was like, all right, what are we leading up to? What's going to happen here? And just the guy stops on a hill. Some cannons fire, and then he rides down a hill, and I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a strategy. I don't know if it's somehow a first person or a third person or what. If this is going to be like medieval Total War, how War of Roses only, or what. I really wish I knew, and I think the trailer did its job, because now everyone's curious. Everyone's like, oh yeah, I know, I kind of remember learning about this history, or people that are more interested in history thinking, oh wow, that's specific, huh? Okay, what is it about? I mean, or what's this game going to do about that? And they don't know. Now we're curious, and we're going to stay curious.
Well, I don't know. If I had to make a guess, I'm betting it's going to be like Age of Empires, some RTS type strategy game, or like Mountain Blade, but I'm definitely leaning more toward Age of Empires here.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's gonna be a strategy as well. I'm hoping I'm wrong. I want to see something clever come out of this, but you know, I'm not saying that a strategy would be bad. You know, that'd be kind of fun too. But it's just I want to see some kind of original idea come out of this.
Yeah, I hear you on that.
Man, medieval's really been popular lately. Assassin's Creed, the First Templar, I mean, it's not like it's never been popular, it's just, it's really been popular with mythology and,
Yeah, and there's good reasons for that, you know. I think there's a sort of romance that's associated with sword battles. I'm not, you know, saying that obviously in a, oh, swords make my heart flutter. I'm saying it as,
you know, they do.
No, that's true. They do. But I'm saying it more as, you know, whenever you do, whenever they have battles between people, say in modern movies and stuff, and they're, you know, they're shooting guns at each other and they're all diving behind cars, there's just something less personal and less intense as far as storytelling goes involved with that. And where, you know, you're fighting people with swords, you know.
Yeah.
You're all up in their grill.
All up in their grill. That's how they talk. Ye old up in grills.
Well, another thing about Gamefly, if we can go back there for a second, what I'm kind of annoyed with is that I don't think they're going to be playing well with Steam, and I hate to bring up Origin, but Steam and Origin.
It won't.
That's the
what Steam
thing.
Should do is get into a rental kind of thing. Holy crap! Would they? Oh my god!
Yeah.
I mean, they already have the demos, you know, but that's only if the game company, you know, the gaming company releases a demo with their game, obviously, and you get to play them on there. But if they had a separate little tab on Steam for rentals of game, you know, pay $10 and, you know, play this game for a week or something, or whatever would be reasonably priced, man. Oh man, that would really boost up their business. And then maybe Valve could get back to work and finish Half-Life Episode 3.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen, but
no.
I really wish that it would, because this Gamefly service is going to be great. I can't wait until I get in there to start, you know, doing games and stuff, but the one thing that I'm worried about is that none of my friends are going to be on it. And actually, Ice Alex is bringing up something here, which is, I think, just reinforcing one of our points, so go ahead.
Well, I thought about it when I realized that I have a Kindle and you can lend books to each other. And I'm like, game lending, like, via Steam or even, would be great. Mostly because, like, let's say you have, you know, Steam always has summer sales. So what if you can lend somebody a game that was like, here, I've had this game for, like, 6 months, and they're like, I'm looking for something to play. Lend it to them for, like, you know, 3 days, and then come back and be like, well, I like this game, how much is it? And it's like, oh, well, gee, it's like $10, buy it. You know, and you can do that for even more expensive games if you need to, but I think Steam, if you did that, they get a lot more publicity than they already have, and they get more money from people who want to buy games but don't know what to buy because the library is so big.
I can agree with that. I think that would be a great system to implement, having something that, you know, is a game lending service. That would be phenomenal if they could figure out a way to do it logistically and to make sure that it wasn't hacked and abused.
Yeah, exactly. Because, see, unlike the things like with the Kindle, it would just sort of... you would have such a bigger problem with people borrowing games, making copies, hacking it, and then being able to return the game that you would have to really up the security coding on games, and I don't know if they can afford that with all games.
Yeah, and another thing about this Steam about this Gamefly PC service is I'm wondering if it's going to be eating into any of the PC sales from to Steam and Origin and Direct2Drive and other services like that.
Oh, I doubt it. There's way too much multiplayer out there that people are going to rent them, play multiplayer, and then not actually buy the game. Can you imagine renting TF2 for a week and then never touching it again?
No, because it's free.
Before it was free, you dip.
Oh, yeah. There was a time. I remember buying that.
Yeah, there was a time. You know, like 2 months ago.
Man, that's what's going to be a marking thing, is whenever gamers are like, oh, man, remember TF2? That game was so fun and incredibly free. It was like League of Legends and everything. And all of us are going to be like, I paid for the orange box. Don't you talk down to my orange box.
I'm a real veteran. You don't know crap about this kid.
Dark I was guy. There when the first hat was invented.
God.
Another thing that, oh God, that this Gamefly PC service is doing that is so stupid is vanity walls. They're going to be giving you a wall that your friends can view so that you can be like, oh, look at these games. I think these games are great. As if you don't talk to your friends.
You do?
I mean, I just assumed other people did.
Wow. You know, I had a friend once.
When was that?
Oh, it was back in the day. You know, I don't like to talk about that.
Was he imaginary? Walls,
seriously, though, that... It's this Facebook, Google Plus thing. They're just trying to get into social networking, but if you're having it based around entirely so-and-so played this game, thought it was good... yeah.
I don't know. I think that's going to be blech. But you brought up a good point with multiplayer games. You know, I'm not going to rent Battlefield, you know, for you know, a week and then stop.
Right.
And Battlefield actually just came out with a new trailer that shows 64-person multiplayer.
Oh,
and
no.
even more than that, they've got 128-person multiplayer, and that is insane. The only level that we've seen...
That is so huge.
The only scale that we've seen that on so far on a AAA title like this has been MAG, and that was for PS3. And I don't think it was possible to find 256 people who bought the game, so...
No. No, so you just had that title. I was thinking, what? That? Oh, yeah, that game was made, wasn't it?
Huh. Oh, yeah, that was a thing.
That was a thing that happened. Maybe.
Yeah, but Battlefield 3, I think having a huge servers like this is... I mean, this is going to... It's,
well,
I don't
that's
think it's
a great
change
idea,
the game.
Because, I mean, obviously they have the maps to support it. Bad Company 2 has maps big enough to support that kind of huge scale of players. So, you know, it's about time they were able to do that. I think that's fantastic.
Exactly. And I cannot wait until, you know, there's 8 jets flying around in the sky and 12 helicopters and there's 14 jeeps and stuff. Oh, that's going to be great.
I really hope that there be modded servers now that you said that, that everyone gets a Jeep, so that way you have 64 Jeeps going at each other.
Oh, that would be awesome. Just like jousting competitions?
Exactly, Jeep jousting.
Another PC game that's coming out that is in that same sort of genre, which I didn't even think of it as in this genre until recently, is Counter-Strike, which is coming out with a new title.
Yeah, Valve, yeah, that's coming.
Yeah, that's yes, Devin, that's the thing. It's
honestly though, I didn't think they would. I was so surprised when I found out about them making a sequel to Counter-Strike, because I know of its popularity and everything, but I didn't think it would be one that they would ever actually make a sequel for. It's just sort of, it just blows my mind. I mean, so many people are still playing Counter-Strike, Counter-Strike Source, that I just sort of guess never really thought about it getting a new game coming out. It'd be like maybe 2 or 3 years from now hearing about Team Fortress 3. It's just sort of, oh, yeah, I guess that's possible.
Yeah, that was the same thing with me whenever I heard this news, because initially the way that people found out about it is because game testers were like, oh, I've been playing Counter-Strike GO. It's been great. These are the additions. And people were going, what? What are you talking about?
What?
And then the next day, Valve was like, oh yeah, that's a real game. It got confirmed, sort of, on the Steam forums, in which somebody said Counter-Strike Global Operation, and a Valve employee came in and corrected him to Global Offensive.
Yeah, I think that was entirely set up, just so Valve could be like, surprise, we're Valve, we do this all the time, surprise, what a twist.
I know. It was weird, though. I was following the news, and I wasn't sure what to make of it. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, you know, Battlefield 3 is coming out, and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 is coming out. And I guess if you really think about it, this is sort of in that genre.
Yeah. Is any other information out about the game? Like, is it going to be based on their Source engine? Is it going to have an entirely new kind of physics engine in this, or what? I mean, obviously, it's going to be the multiplayer thing. I doubt they're even going to have a single player in this. It's just going to be strictly multiplayer, like any other Counter-Strike or TF2 or whatever. So I just want to know what they're actually going to do with this.
Oh yes, I'm sure they're definitely using the Source engine, and they're going to be updating it from what I hear. But it seems like Ice Alex has a big problem with it. Go for it.
Oh, and me?
Yes.
Anyway, no, I was Source Engine, and the thing is, though, is that this new one that's coming out is going to be for consoles too, rumored. So it's supposed to come out for consoles and PC. And the thing is that their Source Engine will probably not be able to keep up with the I think the Frostbite engine coming out with Battlefield.
Oh, Frostbite!
It's so good, but I don't think this Counter-Strike is going to be able to keep up because we're using the Source engine. It's updated. It looks better. But it's still going to be Counter-Strike that's 10,000 years old. I say that because I've played for a while.
Oh, yeah. And you know the people that are going to play this Counter-Strike are going to be the same... are going to pick this up and be like, oh, just like the other one. All right, I'm still good.
Exactly. Exactly. The thing is, though, is that there are updates to it. They're like changes in weapons, and the people that have been playing it for so long may not like the game because of the changes in the weapons, and or there could be changes in hitboxes or changes in the way the aim systems work, especially if you're playing it on the PC. The small changes actually make a huge difference, which is why the patch updates are huge when you change how a weapon reacts to, you know, a click or the hitboxes of certain weapons. It's going to make a big difference, considering that I don't think the console version is going to make much money because it's just not going to be able to compete against Battlefield 3 or Modern Warfare 3.
Yeah, and I can agree with that. With the Source Engine, as Gabe Newell explained in the Portal 2 commentary, is an upgradable engine. It's something that they're constantly building on, and they're adding different water effects, and they're doing this, and they're doing that. But eventually it's going to run out of steam, and it has to.
And... run out of steam, that's funny.
Oh, man. Did I just say that?
You did.
Okay. So, yeah, this I can't even talk now. The Source Engine has to stop one day. So I think it's good. It's definitely going to be used here. And they're also going to be adding new weapons. They're definitely balancing things. I know that one of the things they're adding is, I think, a distraction grenade of some sort, in that you buy this thing and you can throw it down somewhere and it'll be producing gunfire from that area. So that, you know, if you're running around looking for people to kill or trying to figure out where, you know, where the enemy is, you run over to this area where you presume that a lot of fighting is going on, and you're like, oh, where is everybody? And then all of a sudden a terrorist, you know, pops out of the box and shoots you.
Unless it sounds exactly, and I mean to the dot, exactly like the same weapon that an enemy would be using, people are going to eventually recognize, oh, that's a decoy grenade, right? Rifle fire, that's not real rifle fire, and they won't go over there.
What they're going to have to do is implement it in such a way that the Source Engine in the background makes recordings of actual gunplay with people, to where you can hear, you know, the counter-terrorists, a bullpup, and the terrorist AK-47 firing at the same time. And they're going to have to update those all the time, because if you don't, if you have the same maybe 8 wave files that you're playing over and over and over again, then you're gonna hear it in your ear, you know, that, okay, there's a decoy grenade over there. I should, you know, circle around this area and try to find the terrorist who's looking for me.
Yeah, I'd say that they go on a more comical route and make random sounds come out of the grenades. You know, have a dog bark, or you have a Cuckoo! Fat man yelling, or, you know, you have a pineapple hit someone in the face.
What does that even sound like?
Ow, a pineapple. What do you say when you get hit with a pineapple?
I say, why am I in Hawaii?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Sorry about that. That was terrible. Another thing that comes along with CSGO is something that Isalix also brought up, is that there's definitely going to be a console version. I don't think it's coming out on a disc. They're going to be distributing it through Xbox Live Arcade and the PlayStation Network, so you download it and then you play it. I'm sure it's going to be always on, obviously, because they're not going to be bots, but...
Man, I kind of feel like it's a conspiracy that for games to be only available through the download like that, just to take up space on your hard drive, and you either have to delete other saved games on your hard drive on the console, or you just have to buy a bigger hard drive.
Well, I don't know about you, but I've got a 120-gig hard drive on my PS3, and I think I filled up maybe 1 gig with games, maybe?
Yeah, but most of those games you have are discs, because I have the older model PS3 that's the 80-gig one, and I have most of mine on the disc, and I figured, oh, wow, 80 gigs, you know, no matter how many games I've saved, they're just, you know, saved games. It's going to never really fill up, but I have... most of the games I have on disc, except for a couple that I got, obviously the free ones from the... Sorry, we got super hacked freebies, and those are downloaded on there, and I couldn't download the second game because somehow I ran out of space, and I don't know how I did that. I was like, where did 70-something gigs go? So...
Yeah, that's really surprising. I had the original, the first $599 PlayStation 3 version that had a 60-gig hard drive in it, and I never even came close to filling it up. So I have no idea where your 80 gigs went, but I've still got 129 gigs left.
I have no idea either, because I went through and I deleted most of the game saves I have on there, except for maybe the 3 games that I want to keep the game saves for. You know, Oblivion and Fallout 3 and New Vegas, and I think one other game is on there, my Red Dead Redemption save. So I don't know where it went. I'm kind of confused too.
Yeah, that's really weird. Something else to bring up, in that they're going to have a console version, is that PlayStation did a very risky thing by opening up their online area in order to allow developers to have third-party things in it. Like, Steamworks came out with PlayStation 2, or sorry, with Portal 2. I'm insane. And I think that's going to be a really important thing for a CSGO, especially if they're going to be interacting with each other. I don't see a reason why the PlayStation 3 version of this game couldn't interact with the PC version of this game, whereas the Xbox version can't because they're not interacting through Steam.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I mean, obviously, we know...
Try and get console being able to intermix servers. I mean, I kind of doubt it, but it may actually come to that, and I don't know.
Well, otherwise, the interconnectivity is a great idea. Yeah, I think... I don't think it's a bad idea. Not necessarily innovative, but it's definitely sort of a cool feature, and it does give Sony a leg up over... Xbox in that category. And you know what's going to be the most popular. You know that the PC version is going to be the best and the one that everybody plays. But if you're going to be talking strictly consoles with Steamworks, PlayStation 3 is going to be the version to get for sure.
Well, hey, maybe this is the way to get a lot of people, a lot of the demographic that's been playing Call of Duty, like with Black Ops and everything, have been, you know, college-age guys that don't play PC games, but they play a lot of console games, so they play a lot of Call of Duty in that. And yes, I'm going to say it kind of goes along the stereotype of frat guys that don't really play much other kind of games except for the football games, the John Madden games, and the few FPS games on console, you know, Halo and Call of Duty and that. So to introduce them to the Counter-Strike world should be pretty surprising to realize just how immersive the FPS community is.
Yeah, they are going to get torn apart. I mean, if they think that they've got uber elite skills on, you know, Black Ops, and they're going to migrate that very easily to something like Counter-Strike, they are sorely mistaken.
Oh, God. This is the one time the Source Engine can actually really have an advantage here, and it's putting them in their place. I love it.
So before we started talking, I guess before the show started, we went ahead and we're talking a little bit about Notch and Bethesda and that thing. And it seems like we teased Ice Alex into wanting to know what's going on. So,
God, I love this.
Basically, here's the rundown. Bethesda has officially given Notch a cease and desist because Notch tried to it trademarked the name Scrolls because that was going to be his next game, was the game Scrolls. And Bethesda had something to say about that because of their game Elder Scrolls. Now, that's weird in and of itself.
Yeah, it's one word and not an entire title. If they tried to name their game Elder Scrolls, obviously that's pretty suspicious. But to say Scrolls, it'd be like trying to copy the word the.
And who at this point even thinks of those games as Elder Scrolls games?
You call them by the title. It's Oblivion. It's Morrowind. It's
exactly.
Not. It's Skyrim. It's like, oh no, I have the new Elder Scrolls. No, I have Skyrim. The end.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think anybody has been calling it by Elder Scrolls except for possibly Bethesda since Morrowind.
Yeah.
And Notch, in response to this, was a genius, and as is expected of the creator of Minecraft, he went ahead and challenged Bethesda to a 3-on-3 deathmatch in Quake 3.
To settle this out of court. And
exactly.
I hope Bethesda takes that, because for two gaming companies to end an actual court dispute through a deathmatch on Quake... Oh, God. Bethesda, you take the challenge. Just do it. You'll get so much great publicity, even if you lose. Just do it.
Exactly. I think if they want to get good publicity out of this, they would have to take it. If they say no, they're going to seem like they're the stereotypical game company hiding behind their lawyers. I don't think they actually have said no yet, but I don't expect them to say yes.
No,
which is
I don't either.
Bad.
They don't really have that big of a sense of humor.
Because can you imagine this? Can you imagine how much money they would be generating if they just set a date for it and they said, okay, our three best people against your three best people, we're going to, you know, have two maps, each of us pick it, randomize who gets to go first, and we're going to put this online, let's say, I don't know, November 10th at 10 p.m. Everybody come to this website and you can see it, and they threw some ads up on the website, they could generate a cool $5,000 each. Granted, that's not a lot of money to them, but still, that would be better than spending money in court with one another. They could actually make money.
When you know that this
more
than likely will get overturned in court, considering they're suing over one word.
Exactly. I think, you know, that would be a foolish thing to not take them up on it.
It would be. And unfortunately, they won't, but I really, really have this little hope in me that they'll be like, all right, you know what? Obviously, it was kind of a stupid thing to bring this up in the first place, which, you know, the fact they're suing over this one word alone is what's telling me they're not going to go for it. But just do it, guys. Come on.
And I'm sure it's probably lawyers that are behind this, too. I mean, I'm pretty sure that somebody within Bethesda, you know, walked in on a Tuesday morning and they grabbed their coffee and they were sitting there reading up on game news, about to start some development on Skyrim, maybe fix a couple bugs, and all of a sudden they read on Kotaku, hey, we're suing Notch? We're telling Notch that he can't use the name Scrolls? Did everybody hear about this? Why did nobody ask me? Was there a memo? I would have said no.
Maybe the court case was through the advice of the lawyers, and now when the actual people involved with the games can read about, oh, we're suing Notch over this? Wait, Notch said what? Hey, go tell our lawyers, we'll take the challenge. This sounds more fun.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure that anybody who works for a game company that is in it to make games and because they love games definitely saw this and saw how ludicrous it is and was like, sure, we will take on a Quake 3 challenge. We will own you.
That's a fun word. Ludicrous.
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 Like the rapper. He ruined that word.
You know, I didn't even think about it until you brought it up, so thanks.
Now it's ruined.
Now it's ruined. Me too.
Now all you can think about is Luda. Oh, jeez. Sorry, man, I have my talk button set to F12, and I just F11'd everything. Okay, there we go. sorry, switching back to my podcast.
I just F11'd everything. Oh my god.
Everything is full screen. Reality is full screen. Why?
You've broken the internet.
So that's it for news so far, I think. We've got a few more things coming up soon. Things that I want to bring up here at the very end of the show. For one, I was thinking maybe, perhaps, we could try in the future doing more than one podcast a month if anybody was interested in that. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm cool with that. Just as long as we have enough news generated that we actually have crap to talk about, but I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm completely fine with that idea. I'll be getting a better quality mic this week, so, you know, you won't have to listen to Jay's awesome voice, and then when I come in, have to roll your eyes going, oh, God, he's talking again? Shut up.
No, stop talking!
So, and, yeah, we could go for twice a month, you know, every 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, and, you know, luckily for us, the ever faithful and only person who ever speaks in the podcast, Ice Alex, is very into this idea.
Yeah, thankfully. Seriously, guys, come on, other people. I know you have mics. You can use them. It's allowed.
It's A-okay.
Well, Ren, that's your problem. You should get a mic.
Yeah, Macs don't have mics, even though they're one letter away.
Hey. That's funny you bring that up, because one letter away from Vita is Vista.
Oh, why'd you have to bring that up?
Because I don't know. I just had to.
You're terrible. So,
deal with it.
Podcast is great, and then doing it more than once would be fine. The video review that's coming up is going to be on From Dust. That's right, you heard it here first. It's going to be From Dust.
From Dust!
It's going to be coming up first next month. And I'm currently working.
Next month will be God.
Yeah. Next, I'll be working in Sony Vegas, I think. I'm going to try to work in Sony Vegas to see, you know, if I can up my video editing skills a little bit and stop using Windows Movie Maker Live. But we'll see how that goes.
It hasn't been bad, honestly, my opinion. But, you know. Just my opinion.
Not bad, but you know, there's always room for improvement, I think.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, we'll be playing From Dust, and because Devin just got back from London, we're in a, and he's got stuff to take care of at his house, and we don't live in the same city. We may be trying this new thing where we're going to be shooting independently of one another for this. So it's going to be an interesting experiment, I think.
Yeah, and but I think it's reasonable as well. I mean, just because of the timing. I mean, my classes do start up next week as well. So, you know, it makes sense. And
yeah, there's tons of ways that we can, you know, write that into this. So
yeah, we'll work it out. It's all good.
So yeah, From Dust is coming up. Potentially 2 podcasts a month, maybe, you know, podcast every couple weeks. I did look at getting our podcast syndicated onto radio, and that is a giant hassle, at least in Austin. I'll start looking it up in Houston, see if there's not a way that we can be broadcasting on FM radio. But
radio.
But I mean, I only bring that up because it's a pie in the sky dream, and it's something that we can work toward as we get more and more experience with doing this. So
that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, so I think that's about it. It is 9:01, and we can let you get back to your evening. So this has been Colby and Devin with the Aristogamer Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Y'all have a good day. I'm gonna go pass out. I'm tired of this jet lag. Bye.
Goodbye, guys.